This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. After the Boston Massacre of 1770, John Adams defended the British soldiers at trial, saying that they had to protect themselves against what he called the motley rabble of saucy boys, Negroes, mulattoes, Irish teagues, and outlandish Jack Tars. But in his book, First Martyr of Liberty, Crispus Attucks in American Memory, Western Michigan University history professor Mitch Cashoon tells us about a letter in Adams' diary 3 years later that apparently was never sent or published. It warns Massachusetts Governor Thomas Hutchinson that you will hear from us hereafter. And signed the letter, Crispus Attucks, a man of mixed race and one of the four killed at the Boston Massacre on March 5th, 1770. Mitch Cashoon, thank you very much for being with us.
Well, it's my pleasure, Gordon. Thanks for having me.
So as I look at those two things from John Adams there, where he's at trial saying that, you know, these rebels or just the street mob was, you know, presenting a danger and these British troops had to defend themselves. He uses some pretty harsh language to describe them. And then he turns around and he sends this letter where he signs it Crispus Attucks. Does that give us a clue as to how Crispus Attucks would be viewed differently, not just by John Adams, but by American history in general?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, one of the things that really interested me about Crispus Attucks is that at various times in American history, people constructed very different versions of who this man was, what kind of symbolism should be attached to him, what kind of meaning he has, whether he's a significant figure in American history or not. And seeing John Adams having two very different kinds of perspectives on Attucks, at least apparently, shows how Attucks can be used situationally. So when John Adams is the defense attorney for the British soldiers who are on trial for killing Attucks and several others in the Boston Massacre, he obviously has a job to do. He wants to get these guys off. So he is constructing both Attucks and the mob in general as unsavory outsiders. And Attucks is very useful in this regard because he is a man of mixed race in a white-dominated society. So he constructs Attucks as this person who's not from Boston. He's from outside of Boston, from a Native American community. He's a man of, he's referred to as a mulatto, meaning a person of mixed race. Attucks more than likely had mixed African and Native American ancestry. So he's showing him as a person of color, a disreputable outsider, a rowdy sailor who was out there with a mob of other rowdy people in the streets. That's the quote you used at the beginning of these outlandish Jack Tars. That's a term referring to sailors who had kind of a reputation for being roughhousers. So in the trial, he's very effective. He does get the soldiers acquitted of the charges of murder. By constructing this mob, in fact, one of the parts of his defense, he says even to call them a mob is more than they deserve. So he's really, really trashing these people. And Attucks, again, is very convenient for him because he's a mixed-race person. There are some witnesses who testified to him being very aggressive and threatening toward the soldiers, and Adams convinced the jury that they were justified in firing. But then again, 3 years later in this diary entry, which who knows if anyone ever saw it other than Adams during that period or whether he intended it to be seen by others. He has a statement basically criticizing the British Empire and the governor of Massachusetts in particular for the actions of violence against the citizens of Boston. So now, 3 years later, these folks are honored citizens of Boston, and signing the name Crispus Attucks, we really don't know what Adams had in mind in terms of his personal opinion of Crispus Attucks. Did he have any personal interaction with Attucks while Attucks was alive? We don't have any evidence of that, but it's really unclear.
And chapter one of your book is called Who Was This Man? As we sit here in 2017, what can we say with relative certainty about Crispus Attucks?
And it's always with relative certainty. That's very important to emphasize. But there's most of what we know about Attucks comes from the transcripts of the trial in 1770 and references to him there, and also references to him in Boston's newspapers around that time. What we can be pretty sure of is that he was born probably in the early 1720s in or near Framingham, Massachusetts, which is about 20 miles west of Boston. He was enslaved, probably born a slave, and we don't know much about his family, although there's pretty strong circumstantial evidence that his father was African-born and his mother was a Native American woman from the Framingham area, but we can't be really sure of that. There was a runaway slave advertisement posted in 1750 identifying a man from Framingham named Crispus, describes him as a, you know, gives his height and weight as over 6 feet tall and over 200 pounds, so pretty substantial man, identified him as a mulatto. So apparently he escaped in 1750, and we really don't know what he did between 1750 and when he shows up again in the historical record in 1770. Clearly at that time, in 1770, he was a sailor and probably also did some work around the docks, perhaps in Boston. His base of operations at that time was reported to be in the Bahamas. And he was sailing for North Carolina on his next voyage that he never got to take. So we know he was plying the waters up and down the Atlantic seaboard, maybe even crossing the Atlantic. We're not sure about that. So we don't know, and we don't know anything about his education, his religious orientation, his mentality, how he saw himself. So the question of who was this man is very much open.
And makes it tough to know exactly what he may have been thinking on March 5th, 1770. And a lot of people have tried to read into it.
That's right. Clearly, he was, it's pretty clear from the evidence surrounding the trial that he was not an innocent bystander, that he was not somebody who was just in the wrong place at the wrong time. He was an active participant in this mob, described by several witnesses as holding a pretty sturdy club in his hand and shouting threats and taunts toward the British soldiers, and saying, kill them, we can drive them out. Several witnesses say that this was Attucks' behavior. One witness actually describes him taking that club and striking a British soldier or the British soldier's weapon. So he was at the forefront of the mob, apparently. But as far as what's going on in his mind, he's been constructed over the years in various ways. Was he a patriot? Did he have this burning desire for liberty and American independence and throwing out the British colonizers? Was he just a drunken sailor who was looking for some trouble? Something in between? And again, that's a large part of what I explore in the book is the way different people over the course of American history have imposed different meanings on Crispus Attucks and different characteristics.
Does he stand out of the people killed at the Boston Massacre because of race, and because there are even questions exactly about the total makeup of his racial background?
Yes. If he were not a person of color, we very well may not know his name, or his name may not have appeared over and over again the way it has in American history. People who know about the Boston Massacre know something about it. We'll recognize the name Crispus Attucks as a person who was killed, maybe the first person who was killed, maybe be able to identify him as a person of color. But very few people can name any of the other individuals who were killed that day. And that's largely because of the way Attucks' memory was resurrected in the mid-1800s. For a long time, during the period of the 1770s, Attucks was initially identified in the news reports about the massacre as a mulatto. So it was public knowledge this was a person of mixed race. It's unclear whether he was very well known in Boston, although some of the reports did indicate he was from Framingham, he was based in the Bahamas, sailing on such and such a ship to go to North Carolina. So people knew who he was.
And also the wrong name was given initially.
Yeah.
Michael Johnson was
and that's,
the name.
That's very interesting. Yeah, the initial newspaper account actually identified Crispus Attucks as Michael Johnson, or a mulatto sailor named Johnson. Then the coroner's report also identified him as Michael Johnson. And the speculation has been that because he was back in the Massachusetts area where he was from originally, he would have used a pseudonym in order to disguise his identity and not be recaptured as a, you know, as an escaped slave. But we really have no evidence of that either. It could be just as likely that someone identifying the bodies there thought he looked like some other person of color named Michael Johnson. So we're not really sure. But yeah, so the question of who he was becomes very literal at that moment.
And as you say, after the 1770s, he sort of just falls out of American memory, but he comes back in the 1800s. How did this happen?
Right. Well, during the 1770s and really till the end of the Revolution in 1783, in Boston, the massacre was remembered. They had annual commemorations on March 5th, where a sermon or a speech was given by a prominent Bostonian mourning the loss of these citizens, their brethren who were slain in the street by the tyrannical British power. And these were events to sort of maintain that anti-British sentiment as the revolution emerged. But Attucks as an individual, and really the other individuals, all of whom were white, were rarely mentioned by name and often just in passing, listing the name. So there was no attention called to his racial identity during that period. And he shows up very rarely in any historical writings after the 1780s and until the 1830s, when it's a time period when we're about 50 years or more after the Revolution. 1826 is the anniversary of the Declaration of Independence, the 50th anniversary. And around that time, Americans, people anywhere, tend to take stock of things. They look back. Okay, where have we come over the past 50 years? The revolutionary veterans are starting to die off. And there's attention paid to the revolution around the 1820s and 30s. And a couple of publications come out, including one memoir of a working class participant in the revolution from Boston. He was a shoemaker. He was involved in most of the sort of major events, the Boston Tea Party. He was present during the Boston Massacre, apparently. And he mentions Crispus Attucks in the a book in the 1830s, identifies him as a person of color, as a person who was a mulatto. And this comes at a very opportune moment. In the 1830s, we have African-American activists and some white activists starting to really ramp up their anti-slavery activism. The abolitionist movement in the 1830s was starting to be a little bit more assertive, calling for the immediate end of slavery, and it accelerates from there. So just as black activists are starting to really challenge the institution of slavery and also to claim their citizenship rights as American citizens, Attucks appears on their radar screen really for the first time, and he becomes a very important symbol. He was a person who was, as they construct him after the 1830s and 40s, the first person to give his life in the cause of American liberty. The title of the book, First Martyr of Liberty, is a phrase that was actually used at the time by some black abolitionists who were looking at Attucks as a symbol of African Americans' citizenship, patriotism, loyalty, sacrifice for the nation. They were there at the founding. So Attucks, who is almost completely unknown, as far as I could tell. I mean, I've looked at all sorts of documentation of sermons and speeches and other writings by African Americans and others in the early 1800s, and he just very rarely shows up. But by the end of the 1840s and into the 1850s, he's everywhere. He's one of the most widely referenced figures from early American history, and this symbolic role as the representation of black citizenship and patriotism is what becomes important about him.
Does the portrayal of Crispus Attucks differ amongst African-American writers and historians, depending on whether or not they're perhaps looking for acceptance as being patriotic Americans, mm-hmm. just like white people, or whether they are trying to make the case that, you know, this country has not done right by African-Americans, that, you know, there's an injustice that the first person to die by a British bullet was a black man? I mean, do those kind of become two separate strains and two different ways of looking at this?
Yeah, there have always been multiple ways that both blacks and whites have constructed their versions of Crispus Attucks. And, you know, one of the things that's interesting here is because we know so little about his life and so little about his ideas, his background, his education, and you know, what he was thinking on that day. He's sort of a blank slate, and people can inscribe various meanings on him, and African-Americans are not completely monolithic in how they view him. Certainly the most prominent black interpretation of Attucks is as an American hero, Someone who fits this idea of full citizenship rights and patriotism and is used as an argument for blacks' full incorporation into American society. But as you say, others have had different points of view. Even as early as 1860, a prominent black abolitionist named John Rock from the Boston area said he participated in a celebration, a commemoration of March 5th, an anniversary of Crispus Attucks Day in Boston. It was arranged by black abolitionists. But he said something to the effect that I admire what Attucks did, but I think a more appropriate celebration would be to celebrate the life of Nat Turner, the slave uprising in 1831, who actually was the largest slave uprising in American history, or to celebrate even John Brown, a white person who took up arms against slavery. Rock made the point that, you know, Attucks didn't really do anything to affect the cause of his own people, that he was a brave man standing up against the British, but it didn't really do any good for African Americans who remained enslaved after the Revolution. You find references like this in the 1830s, a prominent black intellectual referring to Attucks as the first national fool for giving his life in this cause. And very famously, Stokely Carmichael, black power activist in the 1960s, basically followed the same line, that Attucks was fighting for white people. He died fighting white people's fight. He should have been dying, giving his life to fight for black people's freedoms.
Does the way that Crispus Attucks is viewed at any given time depend in part on what's going on in the country? For instance, if there is a war going on, the Civil War obviously is one example, but even, you know, World War I, World War II, does that change the way that at that particular time people are talking and writing about Crispus Attucks?
Yeah, absolutely. And you could make this argument about any historical figure or any historical events that are being written about. The times in which the history is being written is it really shapes the kind of questions that historians have, the kind of interpretations that come to their minds more readily. And certainly in times of war, Crispus Attucks becomes used in very particular ways by African Americans. Interestingly, he, as far as we know, at least, he never served in any military branch. He may have been drafted into the British Navy at some point against his will, but we're not sure about that. So he never was part of the U.S. military, but he becomes this figure in times of war because he represents African Americans' martial valor, their sacrifice, their patriotism, and so on. So when there were questions about whether African American troops would be effective soldiers during the Civil War, Attucks was used as an argument that, yes, of course, that African Americans have always been willing to lay down their lives for their country. And you see this emerge again during World War I and perhaps most expansively during World War II. That was a real critical turning point for a lot of reasons in terms of Crispus Attucks' re-entry into the mainstream.
So at various points in the book, you tell us about ideas that people had for commemorating Crispus Attucks, Crispus Attucks Day. There was the monument in Boston. One of the things that I found interesting, though, to look at it through the lens of present day was when people wanted to put Crispus Attucks on a stamp. And the question was raised, why not Crispus Attucks when we have stamps that honor, say, General Robert E. Lee, who fought against the United States? And of course, now we have this debate over Confederate monuments. This does kind of show how maybe some debates are not as new as we think they are.
Yeah, that is absolutely correct. You know, when I was writing this book, I was thinking that it would come out at a good time because we're, you know, in 2020, we'll be approaching, that will be the 250th anniversary of the Boston Massacre. And I thought, oh, maybe there'll be some events and they'll invite me to give a talk and I'll sell some books and it'll be great. But I think given events in American society over the past year or so, especially, I think the book is especially timely now because really, a lot of these national events, you mentioned the Confederate monuments, are calling into question, raising questions about some of the key themes that I try to address in the book through the person of Crispus Attucks. So the book is about how we've remembered Crispus Attucks, and there's a lot of detail about different ways in which that was done in different time periods. But the running story is raising questions about how we construct our understanding of American history. questions about who belongs in that history, who can claim to be an American, a patriot, a hero, a citizen, and who's excluded from that story? Who gets attention in textbooks? Who gets attention in public monuments and honors through public monuments or commemorations? And who's ignored? And those are some of the central questions that I'm trying to get at in this book. And Attucks is used by African Americans pretty consistently as a way to incorporate their own story into the mainstream narrative that Americans tell themselves about their past. So when we see these hate groups, the events in Charlottesville, Virginia, several months ago, of complaining that the statue of Robert E. Lee or one of Stonewall Jackson would be taken down, you have these white nationalist, white supremacist hate groups who are out in the streets saying, we want to take our country back. We want to take our history back. We're reclaiming our soil here. Well, that's a very kind of exclusionary language. What does it mean to take our country back? Take it back from whom? And when we see the president using a lot of exclusionary rhetoric and pursuing various kinds of exclusionary policies and not really speaking out against the hate groups, as a lot of Americans were calling on him to do, it brings these questions about public memory, about American history, about who's included in the American story. People are publicly debating these kinds of issues in American society today in a way they haven't for a long time. So I think understanding how Crispus Attucks has been used can give us some perspective on those contemporary debates.
This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. We're speaking with Western Michigan University history professor Mitch Kashun. He is also the author of First Martyr of Liberty, Crispus Attucks in American Memory. Throughout this book, you are telling us that historians, as they're putting together the story of Crispus Attucks, add a lot of things that we don't know to be true. Are there degrees here? Are there things where people have sort of taken a bit of a logical leap? They can't necessarily back it up, dotting all the I's and crossing all the T's, but there is some reason to believe it, and some cases where people have just made things up out of whole cloth.
Yes. There are a lot of things that fall into the category of reasonable speculation. For example, we do not have clear, specific documentary evidence that Crispus Attucks ever worked in a rope-making factory in Boston or worked as a stevedore on the Boston docks. But it's very likely that he did, either in Boston or in other ports. That was very common for sailors when they were in port to find some work in some kind of seafaring type of land-based employment. So you see that kind of speculation identifying Attucks as a sailor and a dock worker. And I have no problem with that. That's reasonable speculation. But there are plenty of other examples of people, as you say, just making things up. This begins, I guess, what one high point of this this construction of just speculation or wild hypotheses about Attucks comes in the 1880s, as the mainstream society, which had paid a fair amount of attention to Crispus Attucks during the Civil War era because of the abolitionists' use of him and making him a public name, by the 1880s, as segregation starts to really impose itself on American society, both in practice and in law, American memory becomes segregated as well, and Attucks is excluded from textbooks. I've looked at school books in my research, and that's a really rich source of figuring out what kind of story Americans want their children to understand about the nation. So Attucks shows up sometimes as a hero, sometimes more as a villain in history school books in the mid-1800s. But by the 1880s, after the 1880s, I didn't find a single reference to Crispus Attucks in an American history textbook until the 1960s. So around the 1880s, African-American writers are taking up the story. They see that if Crispus Attucks and other aspects of black history are going to be remembered, they need to do it. But one problem they face is that there's so little information about him. So we have some writers in the 1880s talking about his close friendship with Paul Revere and John Hancock, the burning patriotism that was in his breast and his courage and They even have him giving speeches to crowds in Boston. They talk about him having being well-versed in political philosophy and having read a lot of the British political philosophers like John Locke and so on. And, you know, we have no evidence of any of this. We have no idea if Crispus Attucks could read or write. We have no idea how he identified, if he was an American who sought independence from the British or was just a drunken sailor. So those kinds of stories are made up. And what happens is once you get those in print, then subsequent generations will go back to those sources, look at those descriptions, assume that they're true, and repeat them. So that's one of the things that, again, is really fascinating. And sometimes we expect historians to be more careful, and typically we are. We try to check our sources. But even in academic and scholarly histories by professional academic historians, you find people relying on sources that they've come across before. You can't expect the historian to research every single primary source out there. You rely on other historians and their writings. And sometimes that reliance tends to perpetuate some of the mythologies and expands them, puts them out there in popular culture, and they become common knowledge, even though they're false.
Well, historians obviously have a higher level of requirement for getting facts right than, say, someone does who is painting or someone who is putting together some sort of a musical tribute. But you mentioned pop culture. Does that tend to seep into the American mindset and do depictions of Crispus Attucks in popular culture one way or another influence the way that people think about him?
Well, I think popular culture has a greater impact on shaping Americans' ideas about history than professional historians do, unfortunately.
Unfortunately, right.
Without a doubt, most people get their ideas about history sometimes from history textbooks, which presents typically a very superficial kind of story and analysis, but through movies, through popular books, through television shows, through music, through art, through public monuments, we get a sense of what's important in American history and how we're supposed to think about particular individuals. Historians write a lot of books and go into incredible depth on a lot of historical events and historical actors. But the broader American public doesn't really get that. And it's in terms of that kind of historical research seeping into things like textbooks, it takes a long time, longer than you might think, for textbooks to adjust their storylines to accommodate changes in historical interpretation.
Every so often in this book, it seems you are telling us, obviously this would be later chapters, that somebody was working on the idea of a Crispus Attucks movie or a movie about the life of Crispus Attucks. As someone who's really looked at this, would you want to see that movie or would you dread what might happen to history one more time through the treatment of Hollywood screenwriters, et cetera?
I do have real concerns about that. Again, because Attucks is this blank slate, Hollywood could do anything with him that they want. And if some Hollywood producer is out there and wants to buy the rights to the book, please know that I want to exercise a certain amount of editorial control over the final product. There have been attempts over the years, starting in the 1930s and 40s, to make a movie about Crispus Attucks. The story in the 1940s, Warner Brothers, a major motion picture producer, had a strong interest in producing a Crispus Attucks story. And this is in the context of World War II. So African-American spokespersons were really using Attucks to highlight African-American patriotism and military sacrifice and so on. So he was in the popular culture in a way that he hadn't been for some time. And there was an African-American gentleman named Earl Dancer who was involved in Hollywood since the late 20s. And was working for Warner Brothers, and he was pushing this idea of a Crispus Attucks movie. He even claimed that he had contacted Paul Robeson, a very popular African-American actor and singer and performer at that time, and that Robeson had agreed to play the role of Crispus Attucks. The movie never got made. Warner Brothers lost interest for reasons that are somewhat unclear. There are different versions of that. And other ideas came up in the 50s, and actually the cover of the book, which I'm really fond of, it's a very striking image of Crispus Attucks virtually flying through the air, attacking these British soldiers.
With his shirt open.
With his shirt open. Yeah. It was a promotional poster from a movie from the early 1970s, which actually seemed to have gone into production but was never completed. I'm not sure exactly where it broke down in the process, but they got as far as having a promotional poster made by a fairly well-known graphic artist. And it's interesting at the time, we're talking about the early 1970s, and this is the era of the blaxploitation films where you have Shaft and Shaft in Africa and Superfly and these black heroes or anti-heroes who are often depicted shirtless, completely, sculpted bodies with gold chains and things. Attucks in this picture does not have any gold chains, but he is, this is the only image of Attucks that I've come across that has him bare-chested. He's very sculpted and very physically fit here, and he is holding this large club over his head and literally in the air flying toward the British troops who are pointing their weapons at him. I'm curious as to whether if that movie got made, it would have fallen into the blaxploitation category or not. It's not really clear. But yeah, I think I would dread a Crispus Attucks movie coming out because of the things that people could do with them.
You mentioned the idea of a blank slate.
Yeah.
How easy is it for people to take this story of Crispus Attucks, and again, in part because there are a lot of unknowns about his background story and those sort of things, how easy is it for people to find Crispus Attucks? And, I mean, you mentioned towards the end of this book that there were conservative groups that kind of rallied around Crispus Attucks. I mean, how easy is it for someone to affix on Crispus Attucks what they want to affix on him?
Yeah, well, again, he's been used in a lot of different ways. I've come across lots of really interesting little tidbits that I mentioned in the book, most of them more in passing, just to show the range of things that people do with Attucks. In the 1990s, there was a punk rock band. It's formed by three white high school students from Maryland who, after learning about the Boston Massacre in their high school history class, they really liked his image of rebellion against an oppressive authority, so they named their thrash punk band Crispus Attucks, and they actually had some prominence in the scene around Baltimore and D.C. and to some extent nationally in the late 90s. You mentioned some conservative groups. More recently, in the 2010s, there is an organization that is part of the Tea Party movement based in Texas, and they call themselves the Crispus Attucks Tea Party. And they look at Attucks as a black founding father. And the Tea Party, of course, the movement that emerged in the past 5 or 10 years in American politics, is, at least in their rhetoric, seeking to identify with the intent of the founders and getting back to those traditional values of American society. And the anti-tax part of that is a big part of their political orientation. So these African Americans for whom that conservative political message resonates want to incorporate themselves into that movement, and they use Crispus Attucks as a figure who was there at the founding. There was also a Crispus Attucks brigade of the Minuteman movement, which we don't hear about quite so much anymore now that there's apparently a wall going to be built. But the Minuteman
for Border Patrol.
That's what the Minutemen do. Yeah, they were people who wanted both governmental and vigilante patrolling of the border to keep unwanted, undocumented immigrants from coming in. There's a Crispus Attucks Brigade based in Southern California that, again, ascribes meaning to Attucks as someone who was fighting for American independence and would want to protect America's borders. So again, blank slate, a wide range of meanings can be connected with the man.
So you document a lot of things in this book that people have added to the history of Crispus Attucks with, at best, thin documentation, in some cases, no documentation at all. If there is one thing that you have read consistently that you could go and just erase from all the textbooks out there so that nobody ever read it again, is there one thing like that that stands out to you that maybe disturbs you the most as a historian, which somehow got into the historical record?
Well, that's kind of a tough question. Nothing really jumps out, but one of the things that that Attucks is often connected with is the leaders of the American Revolution in Boston, his connections with Paul Revere and John Hancock and others, and stories about George Washington and Thomas Jefferson, not knowing him personally, but praising him and giving speeches about him. I'd really like to see that stuff disappear because those kinds of associations are completely undocumented and I think really distort who Crispus Attucks was. Because in my mind, there is a question here that I address at the end of the book as to whether, well, should we remember Crispus Attucks? Was he a hero and a patriot and someone who should be enshrined in the pantheon of American heroes? And, you know, I'm not so sure. I think there are legitimate questions about Attucks' motivations and what was going on in his mind that day. And we can't really claim that he was a patriot or a freedom fighter. Certainly he fought for his own freedom. He liberated himself from slavery. But what was he thinking at the Boston Massacre? But we do need to remember Crispus Attucks because of what he represents, and any possible association with Paul Revere or John Hancock or Sam Adams or any of those other folks, I think is irrelevant to what I think is important about Attucks. At the time of the American Revolution, one out of every five Americans was a person of African descent, 20% of the population. I mean, far, far higher percentages in the southern states or colonies than in the north. But I think a lot of people are surprised when they hear that fact. We think of colonial America and revolutionary America as a very white place. Crispus Attucks being in that mob on March 5th, 1770, and there were other people of color in that mob as well, either as bystanders or participants who didn't get killed. That's what's important to me about Attucks' presence there, not his burning patriotism or his connection with the Sons of Liberty, which we can't prove, but the very reality that working class people, people of color, are participants in the public culture of a revolutionary era America is something that we often don't think about and doesn't show up very well in popular depictions of American history and popular understandings of American history. So Crispus Attucks symbolizing that sailors, working class people, people of color, people of mixed Native African descent, we're all interacting with one another and we're a part of the movement in American history that brought us to that revolutionary moment.
Western Michigan University history professor Mitch Kachun is the author of First Martyr of Liberty, Crispus Attucks in American Memory. Thank you very much for your time.
It's been a pleasure, Gordon. Thank you.
Links with more information on the book can be found at wmuk.org. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.